gritty facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
It's so good to be with you again on this Monday. So glad you're here. Give me a call, 1-888-914-9149. It's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 1-888-914-9149. It's a toll-free line to talk to me for free. You can also email the program, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. Or you can tweet at me. You can follow me on Twitter. My personal account, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. We also have a show account as well, at Cale Clark Show, run by producer Lucas. And producer Lucas, this is kind of your name day in a certain sense today, because it's the feast day of St. Luke the Evangelist.
I am taking advantage of this opportunity for, celebration, that is for sure.
you've been trying to convince me all day that his actual Greek name was Lucas.
Well, you know what's funny about that, though? I've seen some old, like, medieval icons that actually have the L-U-C-A-S, and I was so tempted to post one of those as a picture on the show account and have, like, a subliminal message there, but I didn't.
Maybe transpose your face on the icon, you know, kind of thing.
Or, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we're getting, you know, hopefully we're all living saints, but let's not get ahead of ourselves here. But all kidding aside, St. Luke is one of the greatest saints of all time, and he's responsible for about 25% of the New Testament. And, you know, St. Paul, his traveling companion, slightly more than that. The two of them wrote over half of the New Testament together. Unbelievable. With the Gospel of Luke, it's really a two-volume set. Luke's Gospel and, of course, the Acts of the Apostles as well. And, it's just amazing. And we're going to talk about the contribution that he brings to the table a little bit later in the show. And, of course, most of you have heard by now that Colin Powell, General Colin Powell, has passed away due to complications with COVID-19, former wonderful Secretary of State and quite a trailblazer, and may he rest in peace, and we pray for his family at this difficult time. And I read an interesting piece in New York Magazine with respect to all the deaths that have come about during the pandemic, and Sarah Jones was writing this month in the magazine about, she's an atheist, and she was writing about how the tragedies of the pandemic have almost caused her to try to seek belief in God. And I hope that she continues on that journey, but I'm going to relate all this to St. Luke in the end. But I want to talk about how really the gospel offers hope for us. And there's a couple different angles that we can look at this. Let me just tell you what she said in the magazine. And she said that when she was in college, a friend of hers passed away, and she thought that she saw him everywhere. Everywhere she went for weeks afterwards, she thought she saw this guy. And she said, I really didn't feel like he was haunting me. It was more just that everything and every person I saw seemed to resemble him in a really strong way, and it kind of made me feel like, in a sense, he was still alive. And then she said that in September, another young friend of hers died in a tragic accident. And this also made her wonder, am I going to see him around, so to speak? And she says that human beings are uncomfortable with absence. We like to find patterns. We like to fill in the blanks. An individual death creates a void in reality. And almost 2 years of constant death has left most of us groping in the dark. By the start of October, more than 700,000 people have died of COVID-19 in the U.S., A recent memorial on the National Mall takes this absence and renders it tangible, better than an open letter, more sinew than a ghost. On the grass before the Washington Monument, there were hundreds of thousands of little white flags, a national surrender. I could plant a flag for my grandfather, she writes, who died of the virus nearly a year ago. But the gesture feels thin. Not that the memorial is a bad idea. It may provoke in the viewer feelings of sadness or regret or the emotion that arises in response to an absence, an emotion I cannot name, but that is as close to fatigue as it is to grief or nostalgia. I don't know exactly what I would want from a memorial, whether it's catharsis or meaning or something else altogether. But here's what she said. This is, once again, Sarah Jones writing in New York Magazine, talking about the passing of her grandfather last year due to COVID and some other friends who have died in her life throughout the years. Here's what she said. Quote, I thought several hundred times this year, maybe I should go to church. Maybe I should go to church. She says, this will be news to my parents, my childhood pastors, basically everyone in my life. I haven't gone near a church as anything but a tourist in about a decade. My parents raised me to be a strict conservative Christian, blending fundamentalist and evangelical tendencies. Conviction is my inheritance, but as an adult, I preferred atheism to a generic spirituality because it mirrored the bright lines of my upbringing. God is or isn't. The universe, I had decided, contained nothing but bright light and the vacuum of space. So why, after 2 years of this plague, did I want to know if it hid anything else? End of quote. So that's an interesting quote. I really, really find this striking by Sarah Jones. She said, look, you know, I kind of walked away from my childhood faith, and she was kind of brought up as an evangelical. She said, I'd rather be an atheist than have some generic spirituality. And I respect that. So many people want to say, oh, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. I'm spiritual. But that, you know, what does that really mean? Nothing. She says, look, God either is or isn't. And she decided that, in her words, the universe contained nothing but bright light in the vacuum of space. But now she's starting to question this. She's starting to question her atheism a little bit. And she talks about the Screwtape Letters written by C.S. Lewis. And if you've never read the Screwtape Letters, you certainly should. It's a series of letters between these demons. And C.S. Lewis is kind of trying to flip things around for us and say, well, this is how the demons want to take us down here. So it's a senior demon writing letters to a junior demon saying, this is how it's done. This is how you should be working. And Sarah Jones says, when you read the Screwtape Letters, when the sort of senior demon imparts some advice to his nephew, his fail son nephew, he talks a lot about the Second World War. And he says, the Second World War is potentially useful to our cause. But he says, quote, Screwtape says, we are faced with a cruel dilemma. When the humans disbelieve in our existence, we lose all the pleasing results of direct terrorism, and we make no magicians. On the other hand, when they believe in us, we cannot make them materialists and skeptics. That's a great quote. When people do believe in the supernatural world, and when people do believe in demons, in exorcisms, and all this sort of stuff, it's impossible for someone to be a straight up materialist after that point, because they know that there's something to the supernatural world. They can't be that skeptical anymore. So, yeah, it's an interesting conversation. You know, how do demons sort of attack this problem? Is it better that people just walk around thinking that the devil doesn't exist? Like that line from the movie, The Usual Suspects, the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world that he doesn't exist. Or is it better that they kind of know and we can kind of terrorize them with our reality? So what Screwtape wants, as Sarah says, is to prevent humans from believing strongly in anything spiritual at all, so that they will instead worship more earthly forces. I have great hopes, Screwtape continues, that we shall learn in due time how to emotionalize and mythologize science to such an extent that what is in effect a belief in us, though not under that name, will creep in while the human mind remains closed to belief in the enemy. And of course, to Screwtape and his nephew, the enemy is God. And she writes, maybe Screwtape had a point. Maybe Screwtape has a point. She said she recently lost her temper with a woman that she used to know in college. And this person is a nurse. And my point in relating the story is not to get into the whole COVID debate and all that sort of stuff. But here's the story that is written in the magazine by Sarah Jones. She starts talking about a conversation that she had with a woman that she'd known in college who is a nurse. This person wrote on Facebook, she refuses to get vaccinated. And Sarah was upset about this because her grandfather passed away due to COVID. So she said, hey, you know, it's because of this attitude that people like you, that's why my grandfather's dead. And she says, that's not exactly true because he died before the vaccines were available. But she was bothered by this person's indifference towards the virus. She said, I don't think I changed her mind. I felt better for an instant, and I went back to feeling angry, both with her and with myself. Whatever compelled me to comment on her Facebook post could have become much uglier if I'd allowed it. And then she starts talking about how on the website Reddit, there's a subreddit where people are posting screenshots of people who denied the existence of the virus, were anti-vaxxers, and then they subsequently themselves died of COVID. And she said, you know, to some people, death has become a spectacle that they're kind of gawking at here. That's how demonic energy must feel. And so that really bothered her, too. This is not right. This is absolutely inhuman. These people are human beings. So all of this is to sort of say she was considering going back to church for many, many reasons, including these. She says, quote, I wondered if I'd discover a way to banish the darkness gathering around me and inside my brain. I wanted to transform absence into mystery, to become an alchemist of grief. I wanted a way to mourn, not just my own loss, but the galloping mass death enveloping the world. At the very least, I wanted to find a new church. At any rate, not to spoil it for you, but at the end of the article, she basically says, I don't want to do it. She thought about, she comes from a Protestant background. She said, the Catholic Church is absolutely not for me. I'd be afraid that all my relatives who have passed on would haunt me if I became a Catholic. So she says, that's out of the question. But at the end of the day, she decides to just remain an atheist. But I hope she keeps searching. For now, she's not. But this whole thing that she said is at the beginning of her article, where she, I think this is a very cogent point. She says, look, either God is or he isn't. He either exists or he doesn't. This sort of vague spirituality is not for me. For me, the only choices are belief or atheism. That's a good way, I think, to frame it. And I hope that she goes on to look at the evidence for theism. And there's a couple of different approaches that we can take. And I want to get into how Dr. Luke might look at this question, because it's his feast day today, in just a little bit. But there's another way to look at this, too. And this is through the lens of Blaise Pascal. We could look at this whole thing as a bet. Either God exists or he doesn't. There is heaven. There is hell. There is judgment. There is eternal life. There is eternal damnation, or there isn't. And recently, Matt Nelson from Word on Fire, he sat down with the philosopher Dr. Joshua Hochschild, and he's one of those guys where, like, I had to like go to a YouTube interview to see how to pronounce his name, because his name is actually spelled Hochschild, but it's Hochschild. Hochschild is how you pronounce it. So I looked that up. So I didn't want Lucas to get me in the week that wasn't with one of my flubs. So it just shows that I read a lot, right? I read people's names, I read stuff, but I'm not quite sure how it's pronounced because I've never heard it said in real life. But anyways, so Matt Nelson sat down with Dr. Joshua Hochschild to talk about risk management as it applies to the faith. This is one way to look at the question of belief or not. It's a question of risk management. And if you have a business background, if you're engaged in business, perhaps you've come across this term. I'm sure you have. Even in our own personal lives, we have to look at risk management. So Dr. Josh Hochschild, he directs the Philosophy, Politics, and Economics program at Mount St. Mary's University. He's the serving president of the American Catholic Philosophical Association for this year. He's published a lot of stuff, First Things Magazine, The Wall Street Journal, all kinds of stuff. He's written a book called A Mind at Peace, Reclaiming an Ordered Soul in the Age of Distraction. I haven't read that book, but I'd like to, because that's exactly what we need right now. It's kind of a practical guide to spiritual discipline in this world that we're living in. And so Matt Nelson interviewing Dr. Hochschild for the Word on Fire blog, he asks him, what is risk management? What does this really have to do with the faith? And Hochschild said that risk management is really strategy about how to avoid bad things. What are the risks? How can you avoid them? What steps are reasonable to take? So he said, sometimes, you know, you have to act without complete information when you're doing risk management. You don't always have as much information as you might like at your fingertips, but you still have to make a choice. You can know probabilities. This might happen. There's a 60% chance of this happening, but we might not even have the odds that are at our disposal. So he gives an example. He talks about, okay, so let's say that You're thinking about walking across a frozen pond in the wintertime. And people listening in Minnesota, we have a lot of listeners in Minnesota. If you're looking at all the lakes in Minnesota, you might think about maybe walking out there, but there's a risk. You might fall in. You might fall in. The ice might crack. The safest thing to do is don't even go out onto it in the first place. But let's say you have to, or you want to. Let's say you've got to rescue something or someone who's stuck out on the ice. Or you want to go ice fishing or something like that. So you're going to have to take this risk. So risk management says, let's take some steps to maximize your chances of walking safely out onto the ice. Take some reasonable steps to try to promote safety here. So, for example, he says you could figure out how long it's been freezing. You know, how long has the temperature been below the freezing mark? You know, better chance the ice is thicker. If you know some of the locals in the area, maybe there's another guy out there who's ice fishing. Hey, is it safe to walk out here? You can ask people who have local knowledge. You could kind of test things out. Maybe instead of walking out on the ice, you could sort of lay on the ice and spread out your weight and maybe have a buddy tie a rope to your ankle and pull you back in case you fall in. There are lots of things that you could do to sort of mitigate the risk of falling into the icy water. So how do you apply risk management to the faith? Well, this is where Pascal comes in, Blaise Pascal, and the famous Pascal's wager. We've all heard about this. So once again, just to summarize what this is, Pascal basically said, all right, here's the wager, what's become known as Pascal's wager. Let's say that you believe that there is no God, there is no afterlife, there is no heaven, there is no hell, there is no judgment. You don't believe in any of these things, but I do. Now, there either is or there isn't. So we both die. Let's say that you're right. There is no God, there is no judgment, there is no afterlife. It's just the end. Well, we both lose in that case. Because you're right in that case. You are correct, but we've both lost in a sense because there's nothing. There's nothing to look forward to. This is it. Now, let's say that I'm right. Let's say that I believe that there is a God. There is judgment. There is the afterlife. There is heaven. There is hell. So I prepare accordingly. Now, if I'm right, when we die, I gain everything, but you still lose because you have persisted in your unbelief. And so it just from a pure risk management point of view, from a pure betting point of view, there's been a lot of talk about betting these days. A lot of legalized sports gambling is happening, and I see ads for it all the time when I'm watching football. So risk management, playing the odds, this is a good analogy for our times. So Joshua Hochschild says, hey, Pascal doesn't even try to prove the existence of God. He doesn't try to show that we can know God exists or even that it's likely that God exists. He uses risk management, really, mathematical, probabilistic reasoning to say, hey, in the face of uncertainty about whether or not God exists, the most prudent thing to do, the most rational thing to do is to make the bet that he does, to believe. Now, when he says there's uncertainty about whether or not God exists, what he means by that is that we can't absolutely prove to somebody that God exists. We can't prove it beyond the shadow of a doubt. We can give a lot of evidences for the existence of God, and we can build a case for the existence of God. This is really what apologetics is all about. But we can't compel belief in the sense that it's so overwhelming. And this is the way God has set it up. He's always set it up so that there's plenty of evidence for him and for his church and for the life of Christ, his resurrection, all that stuff. There's lots of evidence for it. But it's not of the sort that it's completely overwhelming that's going to compel someone to believe. That there's always space for faith. Because as the Bible says, if you read the letter to the Hebrews, without faith, it is impossible to please God. It's impossible. You need to have faith. It's one of the three theological virtues, faith, hope, and love. Without faith, you cannot please God. So now in the case of somebody like the Apostle Paul, that was taken away from him because Christ did appear to him. He didn't believe. He was actively persecuting the church. But Christ revealed his reality to Paul on the Damascus Road, incontrovertible evidence. He exists. I can't disbelieve in him anymore. So he took away, in a sense, that faith muscle from Paul because he knew it. He saw it. He experienced the reality. He couldn't disbelieve anymore. That's not the way he works with most of us. We still have to make that call of faith. In the same way, atheists cannot prove their position either. Nobody can prove to you that there is no God. They can say, here's why I don't think God exists. And they can say, well, it's because of the problem of evil or this and that. But they can't prove that there's no God. And you can't absolutely prove 100% to them that there is by evidences alone. They have to take that step of faith to get to the next level. Now, God either exists or he doesn't. So I believe, obviously, that he does, and you do too in all likelihood if you're listening to this program. Maybe you don't. Maybe you're still searching, and that's great. I'm glad you're along for the journey on the Cale Clark Show and Relevant Radio. But as Hochschild says, he says, look, in the face of uncertainty about whether or not God exists, the most prudent thing to do is to believe. Because the believer doesn't risk losing much if he's wrong. Let's say there is nothing in the afterlife, but he has everything to gain if he's right. The unbeliever risks losing everything if he's wrong, and he doesn't gain anything even if he's right. It's a bet. And practically speaking, nobody would stake their lives on atheism, or nobody should stake their lives on atheism, end of quote. So I do think, I agree with Joshua Hochschild that Pascal's wager is super, super relevant today. Pope Benedict, he used to talk about this all the time. So somebody writing in the New Yorker magazine, talking about Sarah writing in the New Yorker magazine, Sarah Jones, I think she should consider this because she's right on. Either he exists or he doesn't. Forget about this generic spirituality stuff. Why not take the bet? Why not use Pascal's wager? Why not use risk management to say, you know what? I'm going to choose belief. And here's the thing, too. Jesus promises this in the gospel, in John's gospel. He says, if you want to know whether or not I come from God, follow my teaching. Put it into practice. Whoever does my teaching will know whether or not I come from God. That's a good promise. That's a good bet to take. Why don't you take that? You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We'll be back right after this. If you want to call in, if you have a take on this, 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. Be right back.